We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
From the
Mobile
Pod World headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. And we promise only to go four overtimes during the podcast today. We're going to look back at, what a wild and frustrating game on Saturday between Carolina and Virginia Tech. I'm sure both teams feeling like they left a lot of opportunities on the field, but it's the Tar Heels who are ruining those opportunities this early this week because of the ultimate result. We have a lot of different email, text, tweet items to get to later in the show. Plus, we have Adam, just a really good interview. What in the world? What is happening to us recently? Chase Rice, former Tar Heel football player, had a number one hit on the country charts a couple of months ago, and we got to go somewhere Adam knows well, the tour bus.
Yeah.
And we got on Chase's tour bus before a recent show, sat down with him, and had a great little chat. I had the feeling, too, it's about a 25-30 minute discussion. I think we could have talked to Chase Rice for like 2 hours.
He could have easily – he had another hour in him, easy. I think he was sad to see us go, as most people often are. I think that's the first pod interview ever on a tour bus.
On a bus.
I think that's right.
I mean, that's fair to say.
But luxurious accommodations and great talk.
It really was. I think you're going to really enjoy that discussion. Chase talks about some about his time at Carolina, of course, about his current career.
Well, I still think of Chase Rice as being somewhat new to that world.
Yeah.
He put out an album in 2011.
Yeah.
He's been at it almost 10 years. I mean, his better-known albums were 2014 and 17, but he's got almost 10 years in that field. He's not just messing around.
Yeah.
He has lived it for a decade.
So we will talk to Chase coming up in a little bit, but let's go back to Saturday. Longest game in Carolina football history as far as the amount of overtimes. Longest game in ACC history as far as the amount of overtimes, as Carolina falls in six overtimes to Virginia Tech, 43-41.
Really four overtimes.
And then a couple of shootout.
Like two penalty kicks.
Well, let's start there. Adam, what do you think about going to the new rule this year? Carolina, it's the first game that rule has been put into place, that if you go through four overtimes and you're still tied, then you just each start going to two-point conversions. What do you think?
There's no way anyone likes that. And, of course, I don't like that because the Tar Heels lost. But I think even if the Tar Heels won, while it was in process, I was thinking, this doesn't seem like the best way. And I understand there's player safety concerns, and the game had gotten long, and everybody just kind of wanted it to be over. But I just don't know that running two-point plays is the most satisfactory way to – that game could decide the Coastal Division. You just decided the Coastal Division based on two-point plays. It'd be like in 1957 if everybody's tired and he's, all right, Tommy Kearns, go shoot a couple free throws. We're going to see who wins this one. We're going to have a free throw contest. I don't know the answer. But I don't think that's it. How about three plays? Could you give me three plays from the 10?
I think
that'd be better.
I thought Mac Brown had a really good suggestion on this. And, I mean, college overtime is kind of gimmicky as it is.
Right.
But that's okay. I don't mind college overtime.
No.
But it's already a little gimmicky, so why are you adding another gimmick to the gimmick? But the argue for it is just what Adam said, and it's mostly a player safety issue that, I mean, and everybody was gassed. I'm sure you were gassed watching or listening or both to the game. Everyone involved was gassed, and it was time for the game to be over. We all understand that. And that is where there can be some injuries when guys, when it gets sloppy, when guys are tired. All that is a very factual and a real issue that needs to be thought about. So anyway, back to what I was going to say originally. Coach Brown suggested instead of the 25, why not start at the 35? So, and then your chances of scoring are going to go down, and it's more likely that you're going to get this thing finished in one or two overtimes. Now, even having said that, most games are, when it goes to overtime, you rarely see it get past two. It was just one of those days where it was a weird, weird game. Just weird things happened. I mean, Carolina did not score in its last four overtime periods. Virginia Tech didn't score in the last three before it got a two-point conversion to win it. So I don't know how much, because it isn't a rare occurrence, or maybe add one more. Maybe you go through five overtimes tied. I don't know. It just felt like, and again, it's because the Tar Heels came up on the short stick. I am sure it is more passionate of a topic for us and for Tar Heel fans. It just felt like a weird way to end it.
Well, and everything being said about the two-point plays.
Oh, yeah.
That's not why Carolina lost the game.
No.
That's a rule change that I don't love regardless of what happened. But I'm not in any way saying, well, that rule change is why Carolina didn't win. No. Carolina didn't win for about 14 other reasons.
Well, and Mac Brown correctly said, he said it was one of the two or three hardest losses he's ever had. And I was thinking, I mean, it is certainly one of the tougher losses, I think, for the Tar Heels. Now, I think it is a more palatable pill to swallow, because I think you, Adam, me, Jones, you, the Tar Heel fan, sees all the positives around Carolina. This wasn't a make-or-break game for the Tar Heel program. Now, it hurts you this season in what you're trying to do as far as the Coastal Division, because now one more loss and you're out as far as, I think, having a real chance to win the division. And maybe even you're on the outside looking in now, but I think definitely one more and you're out. It hurts you because Virginia Tech isn't that good. It hurts you because a third-string quarterback came in. It hurts you because it puts you in a tough spot bowl eligibility-wise where you can still get there and there's a very clear path, but it's harder. But this isn't like last year's Virginia Tech game or Syracuse game. Those felt like backbreakers because of where the program was. I think program-wise, with recruiting and with the feel and the momentum, it is a frustrating singular game but not a backbreaker for the program. But it's certainly a singular frustrating game. And the reason why, Adam, is Carolina had the game so many times. It was so many. And this happens, we talk about this, when you lose a basketball game by one and you start going, oh, gosh, if that layup had just rolled in, or if that free throw had gone in, or if that foul hadn't been called. When it's that like that, you can really start isolating those individual instances, and this is that type of game. If Carolina doesn't give up that 55-yard touchdown run. They had just had the double reverse pass or the whatever you want to call it pass for the touchdown, and you thought, holy cow, Virginia Tech doesn't – they can't go down the field in chunk yardage because of the way that they're playing with this quarterback, and there's only 3.5 or 4 minutes left. What a great situation. The only way they can go down the field in a chunk is if you miss a tackle and misfit a gap and give up a long run. And the Tar Heels hadn't been doing that all day, and then they do it. If you don't get a holding call, when Carolina had very aggressively gone for it on a third down in overtime, gotten the first down at the 15, Javonte Williams carries it to about the 7 or the 8. It's second and a couple of yards from inside the 10. You get a holding call away from the play. That pushes you back. Eventually, you miss a field goal that you can't miss. If you don't give up a touchdown on 4th and 3 on what was, credit to Virginia Tech, a beautifully thrown ball from a guy who has no experience passing the ball. And he threw a great pass, and they converted it. But if you just knock it away, if you tackle the guy and live to play another day.
Or they might not call a penalty.
Or they might not call it. If a flag is thrown when Carolina on a third and one at midfield has a great play call, Garrett Walston is going to be running free down the middle of the field. Sam Howell sees it and throws it. Virginia Tech's defender knows he's beaten, so he just grabs him to save the play, and no flag gets thrown. And it's not about the officials, but that play was. If a face mask gets called on the Michael Carter two-point conversion where Virginia Tech defends it very well, but they grabbed his face mask, no flag comes in. If Carolina is able to get in on either of the two-point conversions, I mean, there's a million. I mean, you could drive yourself crazy doing this. And that's the type of frustration that I think you leave that game with, because it was there to be had, and the Tar Heels, for multiple reasons, some of their own doing, some by Virginia Tech, some outside of your control with some missed calls, all those things hurt you in that regard.
I felt worse after that game than any recent Carolina football game I can remember, which I guess is good, because that means you care again, and it had gotten to be where you were almost immune to Tar Heel football losses and had grown accustomed to it. But now you care again, and so now you get to feel miserable. So congratulations, everybody.
Stupid sports.
Yeah, your reward is now you get to be in a bad mood all of Saturday night. Good job. And I think you can add to all those things you said, as we talked about on Friday, that beating Virginia Tech had been so difficult, but all the games had been just like this stupid game.
Yep.
Where they're all close and you feel like these teams are pretty even, but somehow those stinking maroon turkeys pull it out. And that's exactly what this one was. I didn't walk away from there going, oh, well, Virginia Tech's a lot better than Carolina this year. I walked away from there going, oh, that was terrible.
So 43-41 the final. Sam Howell now 20 touchdowns and 3 interceptions on the season. He's already set a rookie record for touchdowns in a year. But, Adam, he was 26 of 49. He had 348 yards and 5 touchdowns. Was sacked 5 times. Virginia Tech makes it hard to run. I thought they, being the Hokies, did a better job in the second half, because Carolina was running pretty well in the first half. And I thought the Tar Heels ran well in overtime. But in the second half of regulation, I thought Virginia Tech did a good job really forcing the Tar Heels to throw the ball. And I think we talked about this on the podcast. I know we talked about it during pregame on Saturday. When you play them, you have to hit some of those big one-on-one chances. And the Tar Heels did hit some. I don't think they hit as many as they wanted, because there were some there that didn't quite work out. But they hit some big plays that you have to hit to win that type of game. Sam Howell was under pressure, I thought, a fair amount. There were some times where he did have a clean pocket, and then there were some times where he did not. And I thought the biggest issue offensively for Carolina was the interior of Carolina's offensive line just got beaten in this game. I thought the tackles held out. It wasn't pressure coming from the edges very often. It was coming from the middle. And Mack Brown talked about that in his press conference on Monday, that there were some center guard problems for the Tar Heels, and I thought those showed up in a big way on Saturday.
And you can't hide that.
Right.
You can't hide offensive line issues, and you can't hide secondary issues. And Carolina's got both.
And I didn't think Carolina's second. We know what the problem. We know the amount of injuries that the Tar Heels have had, and it just showed up some. And I didn't think Carolina was beaten horribly in the secondary. Like, even on the touchdown late in the first half, Storm Duck was in position. You just got to make the play, and I don't know how that happens. Mack Brown addressed that on Monday and talked about how he showed the team all the good things and the bad things and the close plays. And, you know, that was one of those close plays. Storm Duck he had done mostly the correct stuff on that play defensively and just couldn't finish the play. And so those two areas are troublesome right now for the Tar Heels because of youth, because of injuries. And there's nothing you can do about injuries or youth other than go with what you got and try to get better.
And in the secondary, really, you don't have any other players.
Yeah, you're running out of options.
It's not like, try this guy. All the guys are on the field already, just because of sheer numbers.
Adam, I'm just trying to think about anything else from the actual game
Well, here's one thing. I know – so I have heard that people are a little miffed that Carolina didn't run the ball more. And I think that's a fair point to a certain extent. But who is Carolina's best offensive player? Sam Howell. So I think at the same time, I agree that there were times, for example, where it might have been nice to have a little heavier dose of Javonte Williams, perhaps, when you need 2 or 3 yards, and he's your guy who you feel like can get that for you almost every time. If the other option is putting the ball in Sam Howell's hands, who is not turning the ball over and is throwing touchdowns at a record-breaking clip, that's not a bad alternative. I mean, it's not like you're putting in Stephen Jerry to run the option. I mean, you're
Stephen Jerry. What a name from the past.
And I'm sure Stephen Jerry's a nice guy, but that, you know, that was another time in Carolina football. Sam Howell's a pretty good choice. So there were definitely times where I too was sitting there going, man, I'd like to see Javonte carry the ball. But then again, you have to say, but Sam Howell might very well throw a touchdown pass because that guy is having an unbelievable, and I think it's past the point where you say freshman year, and you just say he's having an unbelievable season.
I think you really saw the depth issues on defense show up on Saturday. Adam, there were only, if you take out a couple special teams tackles, there were only 12 players that made a tackle in the game for Carolina. And that was the 11 players who started and Zach Gill, who had to come in when Jason Strobridge was hurt. So, I mean, some other guys played. Tamari Fox played, for example, even though he didn't start. The lack of defensive depth, I think, is, and when you mix in all the injuries in the secondary, you're really seeing that. And I think that showed up some in the, and to Carolina's credit, the Tar Heels were tired, but I didn't think they lost because they were tired. They were just tired because everyone was tired because the game was so long. That speaks to the strength and conditioning program. Maybe we'll talk to Brian Hess about that in a future episode. But they've got to get some more players. But here's some good news, Adam. The Tar Heels are getting some more players on the defensive side, in particular on the recruiting trail. And that train has really got some momentum behind it, which is exciting to see. That didn't help you today. It doesn't help you Saturday. But it's something, let's put it this way, it's something the coaches are aware of and that they are addressing and improving.
Well, big picture, where is Carolina right now in mid to late October? Exactly where we thought they would be. We didn't know it would be to this degree of magnitude where every single game would come down to the very last play.
6 of 7 games have come down to the last play. That's insane.
That's ridiculous. But we knew before the season started that there were going to be some close games this year, that Carolina was not good enough to blow very many teams out, and they weren't bad enough to get blown out by very many teams. So we knew, in mid-August, we would have said, in mid-October, Carolina will have been in some close games. Don't know if they'll lose them all. Don't know if they'll win them all. Maybe it'll be one of those magical years where everything goes right and you're sitting there at 7-0. But they're about where you thought they'd be. Won some, lost some, right there in the middle. And now you got a chance to have 2 home games to get yourself pointed towards a good close to the year.
Very clearly an important game coming up against Duke. It's one of your neighbor rivals. It's an in-state team. We know how seriously Mack Brown takes that and how disappointed he is. In fact, the first thing he said on the radio show last week, got asked the question of what are you most proud about the first half of the year and most frustrated about, and the first thing he said about the frustration was losing the in-state games. So you know that's important. Duke has had the better of the series after Carolina had the better of it for literally decades. Tar Heels had won, I think it was 21 out of 22 at one point. And now Duke's won something like 4 out of the last 6 or something like that. So an important game for a lot of reasons. Plus, the loser of this game, I do think, is pretty much done as far as thinking about winning the Coastal. The winner still has an opportunity. So big game coming up Saturday.
And Mack Brown didn't just beat Duke. He owned them.
Yep.
Those games were not close.
Lost the first two, won 8 in a row, really, and then there was that one in 95 that got crazy. Was it 95 where Octavius, or 94?
Or 94.
But after that, it wasn't real close.
That was a different Duke.
Yeah.
David Cutcliffe obviously has that program in a different place. A good friend of Mack Brown.
That's what we know.
But
Can I give a this was not a planned how can you justify that, but can I throw a quick how can you justify that in?
Sure.
I do not have to justify.
How can you justify what you've done?
Can you possibly justify that?
So you can imagine the mood Mac Brown was in after the game.
Yes.
He's in the reporter scrum, and somebody asked him if that game reminded him of an old matchup he had had back in the day with Frank Beamer. Give Mac Brown some credit for saying, nope, I've never gone against Frank Beamer as a head coach, so nope, it sure didn't. Hey, let's have a little better preparation on our questions. Let's have a little better preparation on our questions.
Chris, have you ever been to Jacksonville?
Hey, Adam, can you get that boombox and put your tape in? Don't let your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any of the Tar Heel game action this year. Let LS Tractor help make short work of them, from normal yard maintenance to those larger projects. LS Tractor has the machine you want and need. Visit lstractor.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what is it about for you? Adam, I have a little on-the-scene report.
Wow. From a tractor?
I'm going to hop off my tractor and go back to Blacksburg.
Oh, okay.
It's an unusual dynamic. So I have to walk down. One of my least favorite things is walking down after a close football loss, because you got to go through the crowd in most places.
Yes.
And, of course, I'm wearing Tar Heel stuff. So the mixture of comments I receive from opposing fans is always interesting. Some of them don't say, because I'm not saying anything. I don't say anything. It's not like if the Tar Heels win a great close game, I'm like, yeah, go home, Hoagies. You know?
Take that, Hoagies!
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going down to go try to talk to Mac Brown. Right. That's all I'm trying. I'm just doing my job.
Right.
So you either get the, like, hostile comments.
Right.
Which I just ignore. Or you get, like, you get the, I got a couple of the great games. You know, something like, hey, great game today. Or, boy, what a wild game. Something like that. Then you get the ones who people, like, clearly don't know what to say but feel like they need to say something.
Right.
I had one lady say, boy, that was a really great effort. I don't want this. It's not even I don't even want this, because I don't want to be there walking through you. I just don't want this, period. Now, I will say I owe one apology
to the Hokey Bird.
To that usher at Michigan State. I owe one apology, but it's the Tar Heel fans. Mm. So I had run down to talk to Mac Brown. Mm. Coach Brown was ready
to make it.
So we've realized that all coaches are different. Larry Fedora liked to take a moment to gather his thoughts. After he talked to the team, he would go to a room and just chill for a second.
Till the next episode.
The next episode.
Hold up. Coach Brown, not the case. He talks to the team and he's ready to go. Well, on the road, sometimes it's just hard to get. I mean, I don't feel like I was late in getting down there in any way. It's just hard to get down there. And so Coach Brown was ready, and that's fine. If he's ready to do it, we're going to do it. So now we've worked out that Lee, who was down there, will do the interview if I'm not there in time. That's fine. So I go down there. I wait, I get the equipment, and I'm going back up. Well, Virginia Tech is the steepest press box that we go to. Maybe NC State is about the same. Those two are the highest up we go. Well, Adam, no big deal. I'm taking the stairs instead. I'm not going on the elevator.
Yeah.
That's for people who aren't as mentally tough as I am.
Right.
So it's only seven flights. I just gave the air quotes. This seven flights of stairs is probably 700 flights of stairs. No exaggeration.
Tell me when we get to 20. I'm going to throw up.
I felt like I was going to fight the demon dogs in Ghostbusters. So I get up to about the sixth floor, and I can't lie, Adam, I was huffing and puffing. Like, I was huffing and puffing. Like, I had run up the first couple flights. Then it got to be like a brisk walk. Then it was a walk. This is like Coach Williams' story about how he used to say they used to sprint around campus at Kansas, then they ran, now they walk. This was like, I was to the point where it was like step, breath, step, deep breath, step, breath. And these two very nice Tar Heel fans were coming down. And maybe they're pod listeners, I hope so. They're like, hey, you're Jones. And I was like, hello. And they were like, Tar. And I go, man, I would love to give you a heel. That was a tough one today. Meanwhile, I'm like on the verge of cardiac arrest. And so I was like, all right, good to see you guys. Go Heels. So then I get the corner turn, and I'm kind of going up, and they're going down, and but we can still kind of see each other. You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think he said something very nice, like, hey, you're the best, or hey, love, listen, trying to be very, very nice.
Right.
But I didn't really hear it clearly, so I stopped because I heard him say something, but I don't know what he was saying. So then I just went, all right, you guys get home safely now. And they just kind of looked at me like, what? So
very jerk.
Yeah, very nice Tar Heel fans. If I did not respond in an appropriate way, it was not because I was trying to be rude or anything. It was a combination of my vital signs were clicking red. I was trying to get back up, and I didn't 100% hear what you said. Probably because, you know how, like, when you get in a dire situation, some of your functions start shutting down so your body can focus on making sure some other things work.
Mm-hmm.
I think my body had shut down hearing and vision to focus on the heart being able to pump blood.
And lungs.
Yeah. And so they had my body had shut down some functions that were not essential to life at that moment.
I don't think people have a full appreciation for what it's like to have to go do that after a game like that, because you have to factor in the physical part also. Like, when you talk about you're going down the stands, everyone else is coming up.
Oh, yeah.
So you're the jerk who everyone has seen at every game. Like, that person's going the total wrong way. Oh, that person's wearing a Tar Heel shirt. I hate that person. It never goes well. Never.
Yeah.
And even if you make it to where you're going, you don't want to have to talk to that person.
Right.
And they don't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
So if you succeed, it's going to be terrible. That's the best case scenario.
I felt like there were more comments at this game, pre and post, than ever before. I had some lady, while I was waiting to go, I had some lady just went, Tar Heels, because I was wearing a Tar Heel shirt. I looked at her and I went, Hokies. And then I said, that's the game today. Let's get to our conversation with Chase Rice. This was on the tour bus, which is sweet, by the way. So we had a great time talking with Chase. And I will say, Adam, I really felt like Chase Rice was pretty open with us and really, I mean, talked about some pretty serious topics here, about some struggles, about his dad passing away, some struggles just in the music industry. I really think people are going to enjoy this. Other than this mess we've been giving them for the last 20 minutes, let's go. All right, let's let our we're going to have our conversation with Chase. We'll come back. We have our champions of the gridiron from this past week to get to, plus Adam's list and a lot more coming up. But first, our conversation with Tar Heel football alum and now country music, Adam, I'm going to say it, superstar, Chase Rice.
When someone asked us back in the summer to make a list of the people we wanted to have on the podcast who we had never had. And I don't remember who else was on the list, but I remember that one of the top ones was Chase Rice. So I guess we're done now.
We've done it.
We're finished with this. This is the last podcast.
Check off the bucket list, huh?
Chase Rice was nice enough to give us a few minutes to this evening. And Chase, we really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Catch people up on what's happening in the world of Chase Rice.
Well, nothing new really since college.
No, it's been pretty boring.
Same old guy.
Nah, man, it's my life's been pretty crazy. Since I left Carolina, I did the where'd I go? I went to Charlotte for working in NASCAR with Chris Berkey, who was a GA when I was at Carolina. He was a defensive GA, and he called me after I didn't, you know, get any calls from the NFL teams, and he said, "Hey, would you want to do pit crew?" Did that. That was cool. Went and did Survivor. This is all like 10 years ago. I can't believe it's been 10 years since I was at Carolina.
Yeah, wow. We were talking about that today.
Literally 10. I graduated 09, yeah. Went and did Survivor. That was a crazy experience. Then I moved to Nashville. I really, the whole time I was living in Charlotte, I wanted to move to Nashville to write songs because I started it in college. I was so terrible at Carolina, though. I was real bad. I learned to play guitar in Granville Towers. That's where I first learned to play guitar. I was real bad then, too. And then my senior year, my dad passed away, and I wrote my first song about him, and it was okay. It was just for me to wait. I got to deal with that. That was how I dealt with that. And then when I was in Charlotte, I was working in the NASCAR, you know, pit crew, and it was a cool job. It was a great job. I loved where I was in, you know, that I could do something like that after not being able to play football anymore. I still had a team around me. I still had young guys that I could, you know, have camaraderie and all that with. And it was sports. But I was miserable. So when I was that miserable, I lived with Hiley Taylor again. I mean, he was my freshman roommate. I lived with him, South Charlotte. I lived in North Charlotte with a couple people from high school. I lived in a hotel for like 4 months. And it was the most miserable time of my life just because I didn't really feel like I had a home. The job was cool, but I wanted to move to Nashville and write songs, and I just kept writing. I'd go out in Charlotte a little bit and do, you know, open mics. I think I even did an open mic thing, like Battle of the Bands thing at Bob's in Chapel Hill. But since then, I did move to Nashville after that. I moved to Nashville with Brian and Tyler from Florida Georgia Line. I grew up in Florida, and I moved to Asheville when I was 11. So, but 0 to 11, I played soccer with Brian, and we were young childhood buddies. So I moved into their house. I just went to visit them one weekend, and they had a room available in their house, and I moved in the next day. And we started writing songs together. We realized real quick we were really good at writing songs together, and I had a lot to learn at that point. That was probably, I mean, that was probably 9 years ago now that I've been living in Nashville. So, well, we started writing songs pretty quick, and I learned a lot from those guys. And Brian and Tyler were just forming Florida Georgia Line. They were just had their thing going. And then the year and a half after that, we were trying to get in the room with big-time writers. That's kind of how Nashville works. You move there. You go out all the time. You try to meet writers. You'll be at a bar in Dallas Davidson. Will walk in, or that's a big time songwriter even still. He'll walk in and you'll just be like, man, you try to talk to him, try to smother him with anything you can do to try to, hey man, let's write a song. And it's really, really annoying now being on the other side of that. But I guess I can be grateful for that. But nobody would have anything to do with us because that's just how it works. You got to earn your way through the door. It's not like people are being mean. They just have their thing and they don't want you to be a part of it. And so we started doing it ourselves. We were like, all right, we'll just keep writing ourselves. And then what we were writing, we were realizing was kind of connecting with people. And it was, and then Cruise happened. And then we wrote Cruise. And it just took off after that, especially for them, obviously. They blew up. I started blowing up as a songwriter in town. I kept writing a bunch. Started putting out my own stuff. Still, labels still weren't interested. And I still wasn't even sure if that's what I really wanted to do. I just knew I wanted to write songs. And then I finally put together a full album with, or this was pre-Sony. So, yeah, I had no label when I put Ignite the Night out. And then Ignite the Night Now, I just found out actually yesterday I was writing, and I got a text from Bruce, my manager, and he was like, man, just so you know, I think next week it's officially going to be a platinum album.
Wow.
So that's pretty crazy. The albums don't really sell anymore. They did a little bit back then, but it's cool to see that go where it's going. And I don't know, but that was probably 2014. And then, and I've just kept writing, kept pushing for it, kept doing it my way. I didn't want a record label to have control over me. I wanted to be able to do it how I wanted to do it, because I saw it happen the other way with a couple of buddies in town. And it was just like, man, that looks miserable. And it's worked out for them. But, so I just kept writing. And then I guess it was 2017, we put out Lambs and Lions on a new record label, because what happened was, I put out my record. It went, it went gold actually, pretty quick. We had Ready, Set, Roll go top five. Gonna Want It Tonight go to number two, and then it all hit the fan with my label. It had nothing to do with me. It just that everybody got fired, and the new people came in. We tried a couple songs, didn't work, and we had a talk, and it was just like, I asked Bruce, my manager. I said, "Can I get out of this record deal? I just want to be done with it, man. This just isn't fun anymore." And they literally, it was the easiest thing I've ever had to do in music. I had, the next day, I was right here on this bus, right there, and I had one sheet of paper that just said, I was out. And I owned all
I would
my
like
music.
To leave. Signed Chase Rice.
That's what it was. And they agreed to it. They were just like, cool, yeah, we're out. Which showed how much they didn't care, right. Which is cool. You know, that's fine with me. As long as you let me go, and they didn't hold me back, so I was cool with that. And I signed that piece of paper, and I put a smiley face by my name. I kind of asked for that one. But yeah, and then I wanted to do it on my own again, and this was 2 years ago. I had this album called Lambs and Lions ready to roll, and they let me keep it, so that was cool. I was about to put it on my own, and then I met with Broken Bow Records, who has Jason Aldean, Dustin Lynch, and a couple other guys. And, man, I liked them. I liked them a lot. So I ended up signing a co-venture deal that I had with Sony with them. And then the first song we put out was Three Chords and the Truth. And that went to 20. We fought for it and went to 20. And we realized through that we had a lot of stuff to fix with radio, because a lot of people don't really understand me until you get to know me. And then it's like, oh, okay, I'm not a jerk. I'm just, I kind of keep to myself. And I don't really open up unless, we spend some time together, you know.
Has that been hard being a more private person now that you're leading this very public life?
Yeah, for sure. Because I mean, even things like Instagram, I mean, it helps sell albums, it helps do this, it helps do that, and half the time I want to have nothing to do with it,
right?
And but if it helps get my music is the most important thing to me. Since college, I mean, since I started doing that, I started thinking of it as, all right, well, if I'm gonna do this for real, and I guess it was post-college, but if I'm going to do this for real, that's what I wanted to be about, especially coming off Survivor, and, being a college football player and all that. Not too many people are going to take it too seriously, especially in the beginning. So I wanted it to be about the music, and it's still the same for me, but like on steroids now. Because for me, I'm the best writer I've ever been. I'm the best singer I've ever been. I'm the best live show we've ever had. It's for me, it's about the music, and now it's very much that. I mean, we had our first number one song with Eyes on You, and then moving on to this next record, on whatever that's gonna look like. The first single's Lonely If You Are, and it's working.
Eyes on You was number one for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
How does it impact your life when you have a number one song? What becomes different?
Everything. I mean, it's a big deal. I noticed people. Everybody wants a piece of you. And the funny thing is, now it's not like that. It's been, 5 months since I had a number one song, and now Lonely If You Are is the next one in line. But, we got a lot of work to do with that one. I think it's still in the 40s. It should have a lot of life left and be a huge song here in the next few months. But it's everything. I mean, everybody all of a sudden wants a piece of you, especially those few weeks. Everybody's telling you how great you are. Everybody's telling you the funny thing I noticed was everybody was telling me how they knew it was going to go number one. They're like, I told you it was going to go number one. I'm like, I know of three people that were in the room the day we wrote it, Chris DeStefano, Ashley Gorley, and me, and nobody was in there telling us before that day that it was going to go number one or that they cared about me at all. So, but we knew the day we wrote that one, we had something special. So, and it turned out to be right. Thank God.
So many songwriters, musicians go to Nashville with the same dream that you had, and it doesn't work for many of them.
Yeah.
Why did it work for you?
Florida Georgia Line, and I give them so much credit they didn't mean that. I mean, I just fell into that one. They fell into me. It was just right. kind of we were buddies, growing up. And that was just to get me in the door. The rest of it since then,
sure.
Since Cruise, has been all me, management, agency, the team that's been around me. And I learned this at Carolina at AC Reynolds High School. It was like, it ain't me. I'm not that good. Nobody's that good. And if you are, except for Ed Sheeran. I guess Ed Sheeran's that good. He kind of does it on his own.
He's by himself over there.
But nobody's really that good. You're only as good as the people around you. And I learned that through sports. And I took my time. I think that's the biggest thing the greatest thing that I did when I moved to Nashville is I took my time. I got lucky, and they call it luck, call it God. I call it God, putting Brian Kelly in my life at 2 years old. Mm-hmm. And now we still, I was at his house last week. So it's really cool to see what's happened with those guys and how they've grown as people, and as artists. But after that, I started taking my time. Once Cruz really started blowing up, everybody wanted a piece of that. Mm-hmm. And I owned my publishing on that, which is huge for me. Basically, the songwriting side of it I owned. And I didn't do that on purpose. I just did that because nobody else wanted me before it. And then everybody started coming to it, to the table. Like, we wanted this. I said, okay, let's have a conversation about it. Let's talk with Warner or Sony and all these other publishing companies. But if you bring up the word Cruz, I'm out. And I told him that straight up. I said, if you want to have anything to do with me because this song that you know is about to be this massive song, I'm out. I want to have nothing to do with you. And a couple people were out automatically. And then a couple people, Sony in particular, who I'm still with, Sony ATV for my publishing company, who signed songwriters. I went into the office yesterday. They're still my people because they said, nope, we don't want Cruz. We want what you have going after that.
Hmm.
And so far what's been after that is Ready, Set, Roll, Gonna Want It Tonight, you know, Three Chords and the Truth, Eyes on You. So that was my biggest thing. I said, okay, let's do that. I had management. I had a lawyer first throughout all this. I was like, okay, I need a lawyer to help me figure all this out. Now that everybody wants a piece of me, you know, the new hot whatever in town. And that's how it goes. Everything's the newest, hottest thing. Right now it's Luke Combs. I mean, good for him. I'm not talking any trash. I'm saying genuinely he's just the new hot thing.
Right.
And he's that good too, by the way. I was that guy in 2014, but I took my time. I was like, management, I'm going to meet with all these people. I almost signed with this one manager. My lawyer literally was like, if you sign with him, I will not work with you anymore. So I was like, okay, I need to probably take a look at this. There's a reason why he really hates this guy, and I thank God that didn't happen. But I think that's the greatest thing that I did putting my team together was taking my time with management, agency. I'm still with the same manager from day one. I'm still with the same agent from day one, same publishing company, same lawyer, same everything. You get that right, then you don't have to pay for it down the road.
We've seen, I'm guessing, like 25 of the probably hundreds of songs that you've written. When you finish one, do you know right then, like, this is a keeper right here?
Most of the time, yeah. Like, Eyes on You, we knew that day. Cruise, we knew that day. Ready, Set, Roll, we knew that day. Lonely If You Are, I did not know, and that's a single right now, and it's just now starting to work. I mean, it's got a lot. Like, I'm excited to see what happens with that song because it's the same thing with Eyes on You where we thought it was this, and then it turned out to be almost even bigger. Lonely If You Are, we think it's this thing, but I can't wait to see. Hopefully it's even bigger than we think, or just as big as we think. But Lonely If You Are, I didn't know that day. I was kind of having a weird day. just in my head, I was Lindsey Rhymes, who's one of the guys I wrote it with, his dog ate half my sandwich. So I was upset. I'm dead serious. His dog ate half my sandwich. So I'm down there like yelling at his dog, like, come on, man.
You know, this gives me an idea.
And while I was doing that, they literally changed the chorus upstairs to the melody that you hear now because it was a different melody. And I walked in and I was just like, oh, okay, man, that sounds pretty sweet. So that happened. But then we just wrote a song called The City. I mean, we'll probably play it tonight. I'm not sure if I'm playing it tonight or not. But we wrote a song called The City that I wrote it last Wednesday in Nashville. And I had a show on Friday in New York City. And I was like, there's no better place to debut it than that. And so we debuted it. I mean, the band learned it in a couple of days. I'm still struggling with the words because it's still a week old. But I did it there and in Boston, and it was just like, man, we knew this one. I don't know if it's going to be a single. I don't know if it's going to be huge. It could be. But we got so much time to figure that out, like I said, because Lonely If You Are still working at radio. So it could be the next one. I don't know. And when we started playing it, people were just reacting to it. So I knew that would be one going on the next album. I knew a song called Best Night Ever was going to be a song going on the next album. So it depends. I mean, sometimes you know, okay, this is definitely something I'm going to put on a record. But I'm doing it a little different this time. I mean, if you even look at my Instagram, I don't even know where my phone is, but I'm starting to post, like, if I think it's good enough, I'll sing it live, or I'll put a video from the studio, or I'll just sing it with the guitar. And I'll just put it out there. Be like, hey, y'all, I think this is going to be something going on my next record. So what we decided to do, I did that a few months back the week we wrote Best Night Ever. And just me and an acoustic guitar. And now this today, we were spending all day on the bus right here, recording like this acoustic version of it. I want to go back to kind of how I started my career somewhat with just me and electric picking the guitar or something like that. And it's going to have a few other things in it, but that's how I think I'm going to put out this next record. I think we might put it out in the next couple of weeks, but I'm not going to put it on Spotify, iTunes, all that yet. I'm just going to put it on, you know, SoundCloud link or something, my website, whatever, and just say, hey, I'll check this out. This is probably going on my next record. And let people hear it. Let people get to know it. Then I'll do it with another song. I'll probably do that with 6 or 7 songs. And then by January, I'll probably fully produce whatever those songs are and then put them all out. So, and that'll be the first part of whatever my next record looks like. And then throughout the next year, you're doing that with 6 or 7 more songs. And so by the end of it, you'll have 6 or 7 acoustic songs. Or by the end of that, I guess you'll have like 12 acoustic songs, somewhere around that, 10 to 12 acoustic songs. And then 10 to 12 of the fully produced versions of the same song. So it'll be a 20-song record.
You mentioned New York, Boston. You're here in North Carolina tonight. You're going somewhere else tomorrow. How do you maintain yourself physically, emotionally, when you're all over the place every single night?
Yeah, I didn't for a while. I mean, I worked out a lot since college. I try to stay in shape because that's more mental than physical, really, to be honest. But Nondor right here is my trainer. He's back there. I don't know what he's doing. But I hired him last year full-time because I was a show in Baton Rouge, and I was on stage, and I was just done. I was done with everything. I was dealing with personal stuff. I was just like, I don't even want to do this right now. So I got to the talkback mic, which only my guys can hear, and I said, John, where are we going tomorrow? And he told me where we were going the next day, and I said, cancel it. I don't know what to tell you. I don't care how much it is. I'm getting on the bus, and I'm going to Nashville. I got to go home, man. And when I did that, I was like, okay, I need to make sure this doesn't keep happening. So I hired that week he texted me. That's another God thing. That week he texted me and was like, man, I hate my job. Can you possibly maybe think about, you know, bringing me on more, whatever that means? And that week that happened in Baton Rouge. So I called him. I said, man, can you come on full time? So he's with me full time. We work out every day. We train. We eat pretty healthy. and then I'm just – when I'm home, I try to take my time. You know, first of all, I nap every day. That's the biggest part. When you're out partying and drinking or whatever you're doing the night before, or if you're not even doing that, you're still not getting off stage or getting in bed till 1.
Sure.
I try to sleep every day, but the biggest thing for me is when I'm home, is him training me, and then when I'm home, to chill, do nothing. I got a farm in Tennessee. I don't do anything. I wrote, and then I went home and just like took a nap on my front porch. It was just like I'm chilling. It's a perfect weather day. I got a spot where I can watch baseball. Unfortunately, the game was canceled last night, but I just try to sit on my farm and do nothing.
A lot of stuff you've written has been pretty personal. Yeah. How did you get to the point that you felt okay putting that out there for everybody who may or may not like it?
Well, if they don't like it, it's my life, so I don't care. That's their problem, not mine. I mean, I'm just talking about what's happened to me. So, and that's not to sound arrogant or anything like that. It's just this is what's happened in my life. I don't know anything else to write about, so this is what you get. Love it or hate it. But yeah, I mean, even like Carolina Can, that's a personal one. That's another story from the old label I was with. I wanted that to be a single at radio, and they said it's two about one place. And I was just like, I've already proven that wrong. When I sang that in London, I was like, oh my God, these people think this is the number one song. And it's crazy to see what Carolina Can has done. It's my favorite song I've ever written. But this other personal stuff is, you're going to hear some of that kind of at a deeper level on this next record, whenever that fully comes out. But I think it goes back to the beginning where my dad died when I was at Carolina. The only way I knew how to deal, I didn't want to talk to my mom about it. I didn't want to talk to anybody about it. And that's not a healthy way to deal with anything. If you bottle it up, it's going to come out at some point. So the only way I knew to do was write about it. So the same thing with this other stuff. And the good thing is my personal side lately is like I do have people around me now I can talk to about stuff. Where back then I really didn't. And it kind of wrecked me. I mean, I got hurt at Carolina playing football. And that ended my career. But I probably could have came back and benefited the team a lot more than I did if I if I had gotten my, you know, dealt with my dad passing away. Also, I was 22 years old and didn't know how to deal with it. So, but writing music is what I know to do. It's what I know to do when there's something personal. If there's something too personal to write about, it's probably just right. And a lot of people don't think like that, but I do. I only got one story to tell. I might as well tell it right.
I know we got to let you go in about 5 minutes or so. What do you remember from your playing days, Carolina time? Are there a memory or two that jumps into your mind when you think about that time of your life?
Yeah, I remember it's a tough career to think about because it was so promising. And then I started strong, you know. I mean, as any freshman does, I redshirted. And then the next year I was, like, special teams, and it was, okay, well, I wasn't still all in with the team, and we had a lot of bad stuff going on in the program anyway, but not bad, dirty, or anything, but just
sure.
We just weren't winning games. And then my sophomore year rolled around, I was like, man, this could be real. The back half of the season, Notre Dame, I remember playing in that game against Brady Quinn in South Bend, and I was just like, man, I'm getting better.
Yep.
If I keep working at this, I could be pretty good. And then my junior year rolled around, and I was playing the best football I'd ever played in my life. I was the only player on that defense that didn't come out of any package that we had. So I was playing great. I was leading the guys well. I was following the guys well. Everything about what I was doing was right. And then the first or second quarter against James Madison, it all went to hell. But I don't know where my life would have gone if I hadn't gotten hurt, but I know I wouldn't be here. So I'm grateful for that. And then obviously my dad passing away, that was the toughest thing I've ever had to deal with in my life. But it's definitely made me who I am today, or been a big part of making me who I am today as a man. I mean, I've been through so much, so many downsides, especially when I started at Carolina, just tough things to go through. But it's helped me face the things that I had to face. And there's a lot of people out there I look at, and I'm just like, man, you have not seen real life yet. And I pray it hopefully never hits you, but I'm grateful for the tough times that I've been through, and a lot of those started at Carolina. And some of the better times, I mean, I remember 2 national championships on Franklin Street. That was awesome. Beating Duke anytime was on Franklin Street. That was awesome. I mean, I was dating a girl at Carolina where they won a national championship in soccer when I was there. That was fun to watch. We won, again, Miami and NC State my freshman year, everybody rushing the field. That was amazing. That was when I first realized this atmosphere can be one of the best in the country if we allow it to be, or if we start winning.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you got to do is win. And those atmospheres, I've never seen anything like it. I mean, it was that good. It really was that good, those games. Duke, my senior year, I remember that was the biggest icing on the cake for me because I was pissed at the coaches, and I kind of had a right to be. And I'm an older bird's eye view now, and I would tell them that to their face and then drink a beer with them. I don't hold it personal. Like, I'm not mad at them. I'm good with it. And that's just mistakes they made, and a lot of mistakes were on me too. So, but I look back, and that whole season just pissed me off. I was so mad at how the season was going. We weren't – I think we were 9-3 or something, mm-hmm. 8-4 maybe. We underachieved. And then the Duke game rolled around. Mark Pascal had gotten hurt. Mark's, I mean, how about the senior year he had? He's a stud linebacker in the history of Carolina. It's cool to see that. We talk about that every time we're together. We're like, what happened, man? You were so bad, man. I mean, he almost didn't even live through his sophomore year with the football team, and then he ended up being a stud. But I look at the Duke game, and I'm just like, I at least it showed I could have done it the whole time.
Right.
With the confidence of coaches, with, you know, building me back up after the tragedy that I went through with my dad. And I had a great game. I played ball the way I knew how to play ball. I still wasn't fully healthy, but that's just how football goes sometimes. And it was against Duke, who my brother played for. The biggest thing that I can look back on and I can say I'm proud of for that game was not how well I played, but that I finally helped us win a game. That I could look at Tremaine Goddard and look at Deontay Williams and KB. And all these guys on our team, Bruce Carter, you know, the coolest part was Bruce and Quan, man. Those are our guys. Those are me and Mark's guys. I mean, they were the studs, and we were the brains behind the operation at that point. And obviously, and they were sophomores. I'm not saying they were dumb players. They were just young. That was a fun game for me to be able to say, I could have done this the whole time if it had just been different circumstances. But at least I got to show them one time.
Your dad used to love to watch you play. If he could see all this, what would he think of this?
I have no idea. I know that he'd be at a lot of shows. My mom's at a lot of shows when I'm in Carolina. I do look back on my life, though, like even when he was around, when his dad was around. I feel that God put me in this situation and groomed me to do this. Because when I was a kid, I'd wait in my driveway. My grandpa would roll down the driveway in a motorhome and play on the road again. You see Willie Nelson behind me. He had this ultimate horn. He'd play. It's like, sounds something like that. And he'd roll in the driveway every time he rolled in and every time he rolled out. And I would just, those are my favorite memories of being a kid, was riding on the motorhome. That's all it was. And that's what I do in my life. And then my dad had one for football games. I was at the App State game, actually, this year. I went to the tailgate, too, and I just walked up. And I don't even know if they knew I was coming. And I walked up, it's the same people. It's the exact same people as when I tailgated. That's some real Carolina fans. Yeah, I mean, it was just like old times. I mean, just had a beer. I think that night we ended up meeting with a couple guys. We went to Topo, and it was pretty dead because the App State game didn't go so well. But, I've been around these things, these buses, my entire life, and that it feels like home. And now I'm in one. You say, how do you keep up, you know, trying to tour and do all this for your whole, you know, it's tiring. But when you love what you do, I never look at it. I'm like, there's times a year where you're just like, man, I just want to be home. But this is home to me. I mean, one of these things, I grew up in one of these things. So it feels like home, you know, when I'm doing music.
When you are driving the tour bus, you cannot text if you're the driver.
No.
Because if you do, you are taking your eyes off the road for an average of 5 seconds. And at highway speeds, which is the only speed we know on the bus, that's like driving the length of an entire football field with your eyes closed. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina urge you to stay safe behind the wheel. Don't text and drive. Go to trustedchoice.com, but not while you're driving. /GoHeels. Find an independent insurance agent near you to learn more. Adam, champions of the gridiron. We choose our MVPs from this past week, brought to you by UNC Healthcare, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds to help keep you in the game and at your very best. UNCHealthcare.org/sports. Adam, I will give you, there are multiple heels that could fall into this category. Since we've already talked about Sam Howell, I will mention Daz Newsome, career-high 9 catches for a career-high 112 yards and 2 touchdowns. Also, a tip of the cap to Chaz Surratt, 17 tackles in the game for Chaz Surratt. A handful of the Tar Heels who are champions of the gridiron.
I would also throw DJ Ford in there.
Yeah, he had a busy game, recovered a fumble.
And 12 tackles.
Yep.
I thought that was a pretty stellar game. I figured we would talk about Chaz, but I didn't know if we would give a tip of the cap to DJ Ford.
Also, Mac Brown said Monday he is really happy with Ben Kiernan, the punter, and he's been very good. He was very excited about Jonathan Kim coming on. That kickoff spot has been one the Tar Heels have now tried a couple different players. Kim sent all 5 of his kicks into the end zone for touchbacks, which is what Mac Brown wants. And also, he said that Jonathan Kim's going to take over PAT field goal this week. So Kim will take that spot from Noah Ruggles for this week. It has been an open competition. Of course, Ruggles had a couple of missed kicks in the game against Virginia Tech late. And so it appears as though, at least early in the week, and according to Mac Brown, that Jonathan Kim will be in that spot coming up this upcoming week. So we'll see.
That means absolute deadlock. The Duke game will come down to a kick.
Yeah, no big deal. Jonathan Kim. Adam, would you like to go to your list?
Sure.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
First of all, most importantly, just want to send our thoughts out to the family of Bobby Gersten. Carolina's oldest living, or oldest basketball letterman, passed away this weekend at Chapel Hill.
Just talked about him a couple weeks ago. He had had his 99th birthday. I did not know Mr. Gersten well, but we did have and talked about that fun exchange we had with him at the 100-year celebration a couple of years ago. And just seemed like a delightful gentleman, and certainly was very sad to see that news, passing away at 99.
Want to remind everybody, you've got about 24 hours or so to send in your story time to have the chance to
win. We already have a couple good ones.
Yeah, you've got some stiff competition, but maybe your story is the one that wins. CarolinaInsiderPod@gmail.com, and we're going to give someone two tickets to the sold-out Duke football game on Saturday.
We'll read the winning story time on Friday.
Yes. Of course, we have more traffic news.
Well, there is more news about roundabouts out in the world than I could have ever imagined.
Well, we're going to learn a new traffic term today. Well, really, two new traffic terms. Our UK correspondent, Kerry Graham, tweeted at us a picture of what I have to imagine is the worst intersection on planet Earth. And it's somewhere in England, and it utilizes a magic roundabout, which is it's a roundabout, but inside the roundabout are five other roundabouts. I think the magic is no one makes it out alive. Who, at what meeting were they like, guys, I don't know how we're going to get people to Stratford-on-Avon or whatever, but what if we put, hear me out, five roundabouts inside a roundabout? Can we all agree that's a great idea? And then they went down to the pub and were like, yes, passed. So watch out if you rent a car when you go to the UK. Now, closer to home, more concerning, John Howes tweeted at us, Charlotte is getting the state's first continuous flow intersection. Did you watch the video of how this works?
Come on, Adam.
Okay. The North Carolina Department of Transportation says the change will affect drivers turning left onto Mount Holly Huntersville Road. The department spent months and $7.2 million redesigning the intersection in hopes of easing traffic congestion.
$7.2 million?
Just to study it and then redesign it. And what they came up with is like what a three-year-old would come up with if they didn't understand why some people had to stop sometimes. The video is unbelievable. Like we're gonna move these guys over here on the other side of the way they're traveling to enable them to turn left, and the other cars are going to come dead at them, but everybody will know what to do, I'm sure. Then we go to Jen Thompson with the NCDOT. Her quote, I think, is telling. It's going to require a bit of education, a little bit of a learning curve, and we don't expect things to go perfectly.
And hopefully no major disasters. That should have been the last part of that.
Well, when things don't go perfectly in yeah. traffic.
Yeah. It's one thing if you're like opening a startup coffee shop and you're like, right, well, we know things aren't going to be perfect here. We don't have experienced barista bros to run this thing. I mean, I get that.
Yeah.
But that's one thing. But when it's like the largest metro area in the state at a major intersection, we may have some hairy moments. So, hey, Charlotte pod listeners, you guys be careful out there.
We don't expect things to go perfectly.
Adam,
luckily, we're only dealing with automobiles.
That's really my motto when I wake up every day. I don't expect things to go perfectly today. Hopefully, no major disasters.
David Biddix tweeted me with a great suggestion on a podcast I should listen to. Again, apparently there's other podcasts. Uh-huh. It's called 20,000 Hertz, and they had an episode with Ed Kalahoff. Do you know who that is?
No, I don't.
He's the guy who wrote the Price is Right music.
Oh.
And it turns out, you know what? They didn't give him the copyright on that. So he has not been getting the royalties from the Price is Right music. But then they brought him back in when Drew Carey wanted to jazz it up a little. He does have that, so don't you worry.
We need to he and Chase Rice need to talk. Chase has got the lockdown on all his rights.
Yeah, Chase knows how to get some rights. He should have talked to Ed Kalahoff. I feel like you probably learn more on this pod about things that don't have to do with what the podcast is actually about, more so than almost any other podcast I've ever listened to, and I listen to dozens. Noah, remind me, is it Sasson? Remember, he's the big he was the big Michael Jordan fan, and his brother tore up the autograph.
The Sasson, yeah.
Okay. Well, as I think you probably remember, the Sasson family is very accomplished.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it turns out that that includes his father, who is a world-renowned Assyriologist. Assyriology is the study, obviously, of Assyria, and also, let's throw in there, the entirety of ancient Mesopotamia. Right?
Yes.
So what they wanted to inform us was because their father is a world-renowned Assyriologist.
Does this have to do with the Magna Carta?
It has to do with Ramesses.
Oh.
Ramesses, the E in ancient times, was of. It was son of blah, blah, blah. So in olden days, it was appropriate to say Ramesses. However, now it has become somewhat conventional to leave out the E. But as I often like to do, I go back to the original origination of the word. Thank you to No Assassin. Ancient Egyptian, Jones, as you know, doesn't have vowels. So Ramesses meant son of Ra, and the extra E represents the of. I think everyone knows ancient Egyptian.
They do now.
Doesn't have vowels. We got some information about dark mode, and you've been trying it out, and I want to know how that's going.
Okay, do you want to give the information first, or do you want me to give my review?
I think you should give your review.
Okay, so I've been trying to go dark mode for a couple of days now. Like, trying to just try it out so I could give you a firsthand experience of dark mode.
Right.
And, of course, we're talking about on the cell phone. No big deal, I got a new phone. And it has the dark mode option. So, Adam, I will say the dark mode is growing on me some, but I think it's just because I'm getting more used to it where it's not a shock to my system when I see it.
Right.
So I will say I like the dark mode for the darker situations.
Like
so,
nighttime?
Yeah. Such as when the sun goes down.
Son of Ra.
Yeah. So I do like that. I do like dark mode for early in the morning, kind of when you're still adjusting to being awake and attacking the day.
Right.
I like dark mode for that. I think there are some challenges to dark mode during the day. Like, I don't think you can quite see things as well. It's a little bit dark because it's dark mode.
Right.
So I'd say what I have found and I think I'm going to do is you have the option of setting the dark mode at a certain time. Mm. So you can set dark mode to start at 10 p.m., for example, or wherever you want it to be until 6 a.m. or whatever. I think I'm going to do that and have dark mode take over at nighttime, but then go back to light mode during the day.
That seems like
I'm
going to
stick
compromise.
Full dark mode for the rest of this week.
Okay.
And then I'm going to make my decision on the weekend, but I think that's the way I'm leaning.
That seems like a fair compromise. I don't have the option of going dark mode because I'm on 11.3.
Yeah, Adam hasn't updated his phone in 2 years.
Yeah.
So if you want to hack into any information, definitely do Adam's.
The last time I updated my phone, it was the bag phone that you just, like, sat down beside your car and plugged into the cigarette lighter. Garrett Tandy, again, you're learning stuff on the pod. Now, again, I don't know if any of this is true, but it sounds so impressive, I believe it must be. Garrett says, in regards to the dark mode on the iPhone, dark mode limits blue light.
Yep.
Blue light stimulates the brain to be awake. Naturally, at night, the wavelength of light produced by the Carolina blue sky would fade, and we would be signaled to wind down, get comfy, and go to sleep. Mm. However,
one of my favorite times of day, Garrett.
I call it noon. Since electricity, we have devices that produce light past dark. Everything from our iPhones to light bulbs produce blue light, which can affect our sleep-wake cycles. Not good. This feature on the phone is intended to help. However, if you are watching TV or have your lights on at the house, it's not going to help much. You would be better to purchase a pair of blue-blocking shades and wear them the last 60 to 90 minutes before bed. Are you willing to do that?
No. Honey, what time is it? It's 9:30. Oh, let me go get my shades.
Get the shades. I can just see you when the Tar Heels have the first 9 o'clock game, and at halftime, here comes Jones putting on his blue blocking shades.
Eric, I can't really see down there because of my blue blocking shades. Was that Cole Anthony or was that Walker Miller as the ball?
I went to the fair. I'm ready to reveal to you my exclusive list of the top 3 foods at the fair. Right now. Number one, DaBaby.
Coming right now.
Number one, Peachy's Baking Company, the pretzels. Mm. Not a pretzel guy. These pretzels are phenomenal.
Just giant pretzels?
You're not doing them justice by describing them that way. They're big, giant pretzels.
Substantial pretzels?
They're so delicious. Peachy's Baking Company. They're in a little truck.
Do you put anything on the – do you dip it in the cheese or like the mustard or anything?
I do not. My wife goes mustard. I don't like mustard.
I'm a huge mustard fan.
I do not like mustard.
I don't like mayonnaise.
I don't like mayonnaise. I don't like mustard on anything. My wife goes mustard on fries too. I don't like that.
I could do that. I don't. See, I don't like – I only like ketchup for fries and you're going to think this is crazy – and basic potato chips. Not like a flavored potato chip, but just like a basic
– like a ruffled potato chip?
Yeah, like a Lay's. Like a Lay's chip. Do that. Dip it in ketchup. It is delicious.
Really?
Yep.
I've never heard of that before. Wow. Okay. You threw me off a little. Number two, garlic cheese curds from the Cheese Curd Shack. Now, I mean, come on. Garlic, okay. Cheese, yes. Deep fried, all right. Put them all together. Winner!
Yeah.
This is located, it's a little bit out of the way. You have to really seek it out in order to find it, but it's worth it. My informal surveys have told me the garlic brand variety is better than just straight cheese. That's what I heard. I haven't tried straight cheese, but I know people who have. They reported back with confidence. Now, all-time champion cannot be dethroned, but this is an item you take home. Mm. You don't eat it at the fair. Miss Debbie's apples. So good.
Miss Debbie's apples were the answer.
Miss Debbie is the all-time fair champion. She's in the commercial building. But you don't make the mistake of thinking you're going to get a Miss Debbie's apple and eat it at the fair. Too messy, and you don't get to enjoy it the way you want to. And also, you're probably dirty because you've been walking around the fair. You're just going to mess up your apple. You get the apple. Take it home. It's good for two or three sittings at least.
When did you go to the fair, Adam?
Friday.
Was it busy?
It was. We went during the day. I'm not a big nighttime fair goer because I'm old.
Yeah.
It was.
You've got to have on your blue blocking shades at that point.
Yeah, so. It was about as busy as I'd want it to be. More busy than that, I wouldn't be comfortable. You know what I think I'd be good at if this whole podcast thing doesn't work out? I'd like to be the guy on the Himalaya. He's like, do you want to go faster?
So you're saying a carny is what you...
Well, I don't want to, like, guess the weight and age, although our son does – he wants to do that. And he also says – he believes that the guesser always guesses young on the age guess. Do you think that's right? I think so. I think that's a pro move.
Whoa, you don't want to have a 28-year-old woman up there and you guess that she's 50 or something.
Right, yeah, I think you guess 18 and then she's 28. You're like, heavens to Betsy, how can I pick yourself out a prize, young lady? Anything you see you like.
Easy, winger.
Get that multicolored emu. Last thing.
You bet your bottom dollar I just put in she's only 17 right there, Adam.
We got an email regarding the storefronts, and this was from John Parker. He says that he was once an employee of Starbucks working in a store located at the center of a shopping mall.
He was a breeze bro.
Yes. As is the case in most communities, I thought this was a good description, Starbucks became the postmodern Cheers of the mall community. Mm. While there each fall, one of the empty store spaces would become a pop-up Halloween store and then transition to Christmas store on November 1st. If I remember correctly, the manager, who drank a grande brewed coffee, explained that their business was entirely seasonal and they made enough in that one quarter to make it worthwhile. They would rent the largest space possible and fly in and out for these two seasons only to return next year. I distinctly remember when Sears went out of business. Come see the softer side.
Certainly wasn't because of that jingle.
Yeah, that's right. Out of business one year, the pop-up Halloween folks seized the opportunity and turned it into their largest space yet. So thank you, John Parker, for that knowledge about the storefronts.
Let me follow that up, Adam, I received a message just to me from friend of the pod, Andrew McGlone. Andrew sent me an article about said pop-up stores. The pop-up retail chain started as Spirit Women's Discount Apparel in Castro Valley, California. This is a specific one.
Oh, okay.
In 1983, owner Joe Marver began selling costumes and opened his first pop-up Halloween shop the next year. The business, bought by Spencer's Gifts in 1999, Ooh. Now has more than 1,300 pop-up stores within locations in 72 Texas cities. That's just in Texas, Adam,
Whoa.
That this particular Halloween pop-up store is set up. The Halloween retail industry is worth more than $9 billion, according to the National Retail Foundation.
Whoa.
That's insane.
That's a lot of stores.
So Andrew says, it doesn't answer all your questions, but maybe we need to get together and get in on this. let's pull some money together and start us a Halloween pop-up store.
Yeah, a Halloween pod-up store.
Oh, you can buy non-existent pod gear right there. Try that out. Try that on for size. Adam, a couple of tweets I want to get to before we say goodbye. We sent out the tweet of us with Alexander Julian from the Friday show. By the way, a lot of potty buzz about the interview with Alexander Julian. It was very well received. What do you think about that?
I think he's probably going to find a laser sight on his forehead from the Merletti family.
Yeah, that's right. There's one person you don't want to mess with. So, Adam, a couple of things that came out from this picture being sent out. So many people want to know about your experience with the jacket mm-hmm. and how awesome the jacket is and how good you look in the jacket.
All these things are true. The jacket was awesome, as you would expect. I could see why I wouldn't want to perhaps warm up for a basketball game wearing it. Because this body is a temple and I need to be able to reach my peak potential, and it's a little heavy. But I loved wearing it, totally brought me back. FYI, Alexander Julian made me pop my collar. I would not have done that, but he told me that I should, and I feel like in matters of fashion, I defer to you, Alexander Julian. So I did.
Adam, we tweeted out there's a Twitter account called Sports Illustrated Covers that sends out old SI covers, and there was one with Natron Means on there. Mm. And I had – when I saw it, I kind of remembered it, but I hadn't thought about it in a long time. It just says, charge, surprise, surprise, San Diego is NFL's only undefeated team and has Natron on the cover. So just good to see our friend of the pod right there, Natron Means, on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Where he belongs.
Where he belongs. Yeah. By the way, move the Chargers back to San Diego, please.
Yeah.
I've become the old guy who forgets that they changed cities.
No doubt.
And it's like, oh, yeah, the old Brooklyn Dodgers are really getting it done this year. Elizabeth Eford, you know what I'm talking about. A couple little what up, Adam.
You know what I'm talking about.
Adam, a little what up to Coby White. Coby's been balling out in the NBA preseason. Things get going here for real. Tonight is when the NBA season starts, if I'm not mistaken. So looking forward to seeing Coby out there for the Bulls. Really played well during the preseason. We also, Adam, by the way, coming off the picture with Alexander Julian, we had some questions of the location of the photo, wanting to know if we were in the new Pod World headquarters. Well, a couple things. The mobile Pod World headquarters is mobile. It could be anywhere.
Could be right behind you.
Could be in your house right now, for all you know. So the Mobile Pod World headquarters all over the place. But you can bet that we will let you know when we are fully in and operational in our new, brand spanking new Pod World headquarters. We're not there yet.
Well, you'll be able to tell because it'll sound like spun gold on your ears.
Yeah, exactly. Now, were we walking Alexander Julian through some of the new digs, perhaps? But you'll just have to let your imagination run wild on that. And, Adam, that brings up the final thing I wanted to bring up tweet-wise. We received one from our friend Alex Thompson, who said a few observations from re-listening to the Big Grit story. We, of course, on the last episode, had some requests from newer listeners to replay the Big Grit story so that people could know why we called Eric Big Grit. So we did that last show. He said, number one, weird hearing us call him Eric. Well, it's just like BCAD, man.
Right.
It's the cutoff point. Before Grits, after Grits. He's now Grits. Two, Jones sounds different for some reason. Adam sounds exactly the same. There's a reason for that. Adam's
puberty.
Adam had already blossomed at the time. No. Adam is actually on the same headset and piece of equipment even through the mobile pod world headquarters that he was on then.
I'm like Cal Ripken.
Yeah. Yeah. Kevin Costner, though, not coming to your house. I am on a different piece of equipment. So I was speaking back in the old Pod World headquarters. I was on a much more studio quality professional microphone, whereas Adam was on the headset mic because we didn't want to give Adam nice things because we didn't know how long he was going to be around, if you know what I'm saying. But so now we're both on the headsets in mobile Pod World headquarters, but when we move into brand new spanking glistening beautiful Pod World headquarters coming soon, then we'll both be on the super fancy studio mics. So not only will I sound higher quality, so will Adam.
I hope I sound like Celine Dion. She's got the purest voice I can think of. Every night in my dreams, I do the pod.
Every night in my dreams, I see you, I feel you. That is how I know you. Go on.
Bob Sheppengrill. Can we explain the rule regarding loud speaker noise preceding a play? He said at Virginia Tech, he thought they used the music up to 5 seconds left on the play clock at times. All right, we have got an expert answer on this question. So the actual written rule is that you have to do it when they break the huddle, the opposition.
You have to stop doing it.
Yes. So that is any fabricated sound, meaning band playing, music through the speakers, not crowd cheering, of course, but any
turkey gobbles.
Right. Any manufactured sound. But that has gotten to be a very gray area because nobody really huddles anymore. And so in the vein of sportsmanship, you really should probably stop doing it when everybody is set and up there to go. But even that, Adam, I mean, so many times a team will look like it's ready to snap and then look over to the sideline. So my guess is that most schools wait now to a certain number on the clock, even though that is not a written rule to my knowledge. But everybody, it's one of those things where kind of everybody's living in the same gray area. I don't feel like anybody in one particular place is more egregious than another. And that includes Carolina. I mean, the Tar Heels do it too. And so I don't – that wasn't something that stood out to me this past weekend in a way that is any worse than anywhere else, I guess.
It's modern sports.
Yeah. Adam, anything else before we go?
No, I don't think so.
All right. We'll be back later in the week, preview a big matchup with Duke. We will have another great guest. By the way, before we go, I hope you watched the All Access. It was at the exact same time as Mac Brown Live, so you probably recorded it.
Right.
While you listen to Mac Brown Live and then watch the All Access on Carolina basketball. So that show running through the basketball season, we have heard, because as of this time that Adam and I are recording, it hasn't actually hit the airwaves yet. We've heard that the Carolina Insider has a part on the show. There is a possibility that there'll be some pod nuggets on the show throughout the season. So hopefully we say something worthwhile, which is 50-50 at best. So we're hoping that we can be a part of that and hope that you enjoyed it. It seems like it's going to be really, really cool.
If the show wins an Emmy, I assume they'll put the Emmy in Pod World headquarters.
Right. We'll just put it in the pod box until the room's ready.
Right.
Hopefully it won't get rusted in the 18 years between now and then. For now, Adam, we're going to let Chase Rice and the RZA, two award-winning musical performers.
I could see that collab happening.
Yeah, we should make it happen. For now, we'll let them combine their talents to get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
Y'all, I'm Chase Rice. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.